just one look at you, and I know it's gonna be a lovely day. Good morning, Houston. Welcome to Amplified Houston on 90.1 FM KPFT Pacifica Radio in Houston, Texas, 89.5 FM in Galveston, 91.9 in Huntsville, and streaming online at kpft.org. Amplified Houston is a collaboration of five nonprofit organizations: Baker Ripley, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Houston, Children at Risk, the Women's Home, the Houston Food Bank, and Houston's community radio station, KPFT Pacifica Radio. Listeners, all the programs you hear on KPFT are listener-supported. Become a sustaining member today by calling 713-526-5738 and pressing option 1. I am your host, Anna Coffey. It is my pride and privilege to serve as the CEO of the Women's Home, and this is Amplified Houston, the Women's Edition, where we talk to women doing hard things. In today's show, we'll speak with Mary Vasquez, Vice President of United Way of Greater Houston. Amplified Houston is supported in part by The Cottage Shop, a thrift store located at 811 Westheimer Road in Houston, which is owned and operated by the Women's Home. Proceeds from The Cottage Shop pay for programs that help women reclaim their lives. Further information can be found at thewomenshome.org /cottage shop. Mary, welcome to the show. We're so happy to have you here.
Good morning. Pleasure to be on the show.
Great. So, Mary, please share with our audience a little bit about your position at United Way and a little bit about the journey that you took to get there.
Sure, certainly. Currently, I'm the Vice President of Community Outreach at United Way of Greater Houston, providing oversight over the direct programs that United Way operates here at our center out of 50 Watt Drive, including our 211 Texas United Way Helpline, which is the first call for help for many individuals in our community, our United Way centers that provide co-location of services for the community, our nonprofit connection capacity building services, our disaster recovery programming, and our policy work is at the forefront of the work that I do here. Recently, I was promoted to Chief Impact Officer of United Way, which
Congratulations.
Is a new Thank you. It's a new position that will provide leadership oversight over United Way's investments, resources, and programs that work to improve lives, build a stronger community, and create meaningful opportunities for people to prosper. I started at United Way over 30 years ago in an administrative role and have worked my way through the organization to become the first Latina executive officer of the organization and now its first chief impact officer.
Wow, that's fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, 30 years at any one place is a really long time, but the fact that you worked yourself up from an administrative position all the way up now to chief impact officer, that's so impressive. What a legacy of service you've had there. So, Mary, you had a childhood that I think probably a lot of our listeners could relate to. You talked about growing up poor, but you didn't realize it at the time, right? That tells me that your parents were really conscious of how they talked about money around you, how they operated around you as kind of a shield, I think. What did your childhood actually feel like from the inside?
Well, my childhood was much like most children that grew up in the 70s. I'm telling my age now. We didn't have the tech toys that kids have now, you know, growing up.
Yep.
So we spent much of our time outdoors playing sports, mm-hmm. baseball, mm-hmm. volleyball, you name it. Mm-hmm. And so most of my childhood, I remember as being outdoors in nature with my, you know, the neighborhood, you know, kids. That we were just like a little pack. We went from one home to another, playing in each person's backyard or front yard or what have you. And everyone in my neighborhood was from similar socioeconomic background. So none of us really realized that we were poor. It was not, I think, until we got to school that it became apparent that some kids had more resources than others. And I started to realize that not everyone lived the way that we did. We only went clothes shopping once a year when school was about to start to get the main essentials. And everything else came from thrift shops or garage sales or hand-me-downs. So it was, I just didn't realize it at the time. It was until I started going to school that that started to click for me. My parents were very supportive. We didn't have much, but we didn't do without. So it was a wonderful upbringing.
Yeah, that's I'm also a child of the 70s, so I remember what you're talking about, drinking from the garden hose and spending most of the time outside, and those were some pretty special days now in retrospect. So, all right. Well, so you were also raised in a completely Spanish speaking household. And you didn't actually speak English until you started kindergarten. So what do you remember about that experience?
My parents and grandparents immigrated to the U.S. about 60 years ago to create a better life for themselves and their families. And so Spanish was all they knew. It was the primary language spoken at home. Mm-hmm. We didn't learn English until we went to elementary school. It was hard starting school and not understanding the language. There was no ESL classes back then. You were thrown into the deep end, as I like to say, in classes with only English speakers, and the teachers all spoke English. So you had to learn the language very, very quickly in order to adapt. And so that was, it very much shaped me in the first couple of years of my education, was that always feeling behind because of the fact that I didn't have the language. The language was a deficit, right, that I had to overcome.
Yeah. Well, we call it a deficit, but actually I think it was a gift, because you have now two fluent languages. So, yeah. Well, so you were not from an English-speaking family, but you went on from not speaking any English to being one of the top students in your class. What changed? How did that process feel for you?
Well, we were highly motivated to learn the language and take seat at school. My parents expected us to work hard and study hard so we could make up for the fact that we didn't have the best start. We also made friends fast and became very social, which I think was apparent to our teachers, that and we just were always trying to make sure we got the assignments in, on time, that we, really double checked our work, made sure that we were scoring high grades. My parents had a high expectation for us in terms of making sure that our grades were, that we were A students throughout our elementary career. And so that, I think, is what led us to, to receive recognition. I received it, and my sister received it. I remember I was in the fourth or fifth grade, and my sister was a year behind me, and we each were recognized, as they recognized three or four kids in the whole school for a top achievement. Back then, they used to call it, oh my gosh, I can't even think of the title, but it was like a top student achievement award. And it was due to our good grades, our work ethic, and our demeanor. And so it was a school of probably, 600, 700 kids. And to receive that honor, given how we had started, was meaningful.
Yeah. I just have this image in my head of beaming, proud parents. That are just probably
proud.
so proud of all of you. And really, I mean, you were living the American dream.
That's
Your
correct.
Parents left their home country to try to find a better life.
Right.
They came to the United States, and within a few short years, they have daughters who are performing at the top of their class, who are getting awards, who are, you know, set up for a very bright future.
Yes.
So this part of your story, you started working at 15 and you haven't stopped. That I really relate to, because when I turned 16, not 15, but 16, my father said to me, "All right, you're 16, you're legal to work, get to work, go find a job." And I had been babysitting since I was 11, right? But I hadn't had a real job yet. So I went out and pounded the pavement, found a job at a restaurant. And really, aside from a few years where I was a stay-at-home mom, I haven't stopped working since. So where do you think that level of drive comes from? And how do you think it's tied to your early experiences with poverty?
Well, part of it, I think, when we started, you know, I started working at 15, the same, similar to you, to your situation at a local convenience store. I remember one summer I worked at a book bindery, binding books. Like I did whatever job, you know, I could find at the time. Mm-hmm. And it was really to help my family out. And also because, maybe selfishly, I also wanted to have all the cute clothes and tennis shoes that, you know, all the kids my age were wearing, right? And so I knew that if I wanted that, I had to work hard to provide it for myself. And so that attitude has stayed with me this whole time about the fact that I have to work hard to provide for myself and my family, that, you know, that drives me. It was instilled in me at a young age, and it is part of what has shaped my work ethic. And I still, I think, fundamentally believe that I have to always work just as hard and keep on working until I'm able to retire to be able to give my daughter the opportunities that I didn't have, right? And to make life a little easier for her and help in her upward mobility as well.
Yeah. And as a first, so you worked from the age of 15 and you eventually made it to college.
Mm-hmm.
First person in your family to go to college?
Actually, I started, my sister finished college before I did. She, I got married at a young age, so I started school, but didn't finish it. I went back later as an adult, as a young mom, to finish my undergraduate degree. But yes, I have three siblings that are all college educated. We're the first generation in our family to be college educated. That has been significant. And it was challenging going back to school as a working mom, wife, all of those things, right? Because you're trying to work hard at work. You're trying to provide for your family. You're trying to, you know, do all of that. But I had a wonderful support system with my husband, my parents, my sister, that all helped me out while I was in school to make sure that my daughter was well taken care of when I had weekend classes or an evening class or what have you. So that helped me to finish that mm-hmm. goal that I had.
Yeah. We're going to take a quick break to talk about how this radio show is coming to you. KPFT takes no advertising dollars at all, and almost every one of the people who work to bring you the shows are volunteers. Please call 713-526-5738 and press option 1 to become a sustaining member today. We are back. This is Anna Coffey with Amplified Houston, the Women's Edition. We are speaking with Mary Vasquez today, who is Vice President at United Way, although I think I'm going to start using your new title, Chief Impact Officer at United Way of Greater Houston. All right, Mary, let's talk about United Way and where you started and how you climbed the ladder. First, I want to say mad respect for being a mom, going to school, working all at the same time. I know what that feels like. I was a single mom, going to law school, working full time, doing the single mom thing. And that's an incredible balancing act. And the only way that any of us get through that is by the people around us supporting us every step of the way. So I really resonated with that part of your story. But let's switch gears and talk about United Way. So you walk in as an administrative assistant. Tell us about that.
So I started working at the United Way when I was like, right at high, I think graduating from high school. I have worked in so many different roles here over the last 30 years, that to and so I understand very deeply the work that we do and the different roles that we play in the community. So that has helped shape how I see the people we serve in the community. Fundamentally, I still put myself in the shoes of those individuals that need help. When I am working to develop a program that is client-centered, or I'm working to ensure that we are making investments and programs that meet the needs of the community, I see myself in those individuals that we are serving. So I want to treat them in the way that I would want to be treated as a help seeker, because I was one at one point, right? My family was, help seekers at one point. So that is really has taught me to always put myself in their shoes and to make sure that with everything that we do, we listen with empathy, that we respect the situation that they're in. It's time limited, that we help empower them, provide choices and opportunities for them to help, give them a hand up, and so that they can land on their feet and stay there. That has been the core of the work that we do here at United Way and have done and will continue to do.
That is so beautiful. And I love that it comes from a place of empathy or lived experience for you, right? United Way has a lot of programs that primarily are all geared towards lifting people out of poverty and helping them become self-sufficient. I think there's a strong narrative in this country, and especially in Texas, that if you work hard, you can find your way out of poverty. And I think that's true for many people, but I also think that there are some systemic issues that maybe prevent people from that being a very easy journey. Based on your experience, what does the hard work solve, and where do systems still need to step in?
Well, working hard will get you part of the way there, but there is some deeply that there is some work that needs to happen to be able to provide holistic programming, services, and resources to help individuals, and to create some solutions for that to address the barriers that people face. There, the systems. I've seen firsthand how systems can either open doors or quietly keep them closed. And that has grounded me in the belief that impact just isn't about intention. It's about the outcomes that people can actually feel in their daily lives. And so we have to be able to create structures and mechanisms that promote that upward economic mobility for families, that and making sure that we address systemic issues that hinder or create barriers for them, that and as we create solutions for them that will help them achieve what they want to achieve, in life.
Mary, I wonder if you could give our listeners a couple of examples of some of those systemic barriers that you've seen along the way.
Well, I sometimes programs or organizations or can create inequities or can create barriers without even intending it to be that way. I have seen firsthand, like through my work in disaster programming, in disaster recovery, how challenging it is for families in our community to sometimes receive disaster assistance, because the paperwork can be very lengthy. Sometimes it's not in a language or in a literacy level that everyone understands. It feels like when you receive some of these applications to qualify for assistance, it almost feels like, I don't know if you all will recall the first time you ever applied for a mortgage loan and you're like, oh my gosh, they want everything, right? They want
Right.
your bank statements. They want your da, 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 da. It's so much work and so much paperwork. So they create barriers to individuals to access those services because of how challenging the paperwork process is. And so that needs to sometimes be streamlined to ensure that individuals can access those programs because it is the need is there and the resource is there. Sometimes it's about how do we create the mechanism and the systems to be able to connect the two.
Right. I remember we had a young man come and stay with us as part of an exchange program, and he was from Brazil. And when he turned up on my doorstep, he had flip-flops, one pair of shorts, two tops, and that was it. So I said, "Come on, let me take you shopping. Let's go." And we went shopping. We got him equipped. He, sailed through high school. He was incredibly bright, managed to graduate from our American high school with high honors, just really bright, energetic, lovely young man. He later came back to the United States for college, and we saw him multiple times. We were his American family. But he started running into problems at college because there were just so many cultural barriers. He had never lived in a dorm before. He had no frame of reference for what it took to study for an exam, or how prompt you had to be with getting papers in, or even how to manage the very cold climate that he was not used to. And eventually, he made the decision to leave. Without contacting us, he was too ashamed to get in touch and tell us what was going on. And I just found it so sad because here was a boy who had so much potential and he had finally gotten his big break, but there were just systemic barriers that were getting in his way. And I would say cultural barriers that he was too embarrassed to talk about. So whenever I think about, barriers, it was not his intelligence or his friendliness or his, ability to relate to people. It was just a cultural barrier that prevented him from really being successful. So I always remember him when we talk about these things. So let's shift gears a little bit and talk about United Way. I think a lot of people in our community know the word, the words United Way, but are not really clear on what the United Way does. So give us a sense, in the last few minutes remaining, what it is that United, what role United Way fills in our community.
Well, United Way here is here in the community to help create connections for individuals. We invest in resources, programs, and services that enable individuals to work towards whatever their goals may be to achieve financial stability, which is our North Star here at United Way. And we do that by connecting individuals through, if individuals need assistance, our 211 Texas United Way helpline is here 24 hours a day, every day of the year. Whether you need help finding childcare, food assistance, care for an aging parent, or a haven from domestic violence, 211 is the number for individuals to call when they don't know who to call. Our trained informational referral specialists are good listeners, and they can help connect individuals to the resources they need. And for individuals that are re ready to work hard on their goals, our integrated client journey approach is available to connect you directly to resources from our network of nearly 100 partners across a range of services like job training, financial coaching, out-of-school time programs, healthcare. A navigator is here to assist for individuals that need assistance with their immediate and long-term goals to help them build a personalized journey and connect them to the right services at the right time.
Yeah, United Way is so impactful in our community. I really believe, as an organization that is a United Way partner, I have found it to be incredibly empowering for the nonprofits to be able to work together in a coordinated effort. There's just been so many good things that have come from it. And on top of all of that, United Way is like a great resource for people who are looking for services. It's a great navigator. So I encourage people to use that 211 helpline. No matter what issue you're facing, it's not just poverty. As you said, it's domestic violence relief. It's other types of programs for if you're a caretaker or have an elderly parent. There's all kinds of services you can access through it. So, Mary, as we wrap up today, your daughter is now graduating from college. Congratulations, Mama. You
Thank
did
you.
it. And
Thank you so much.
you've watched that American dream play out into the next generation, in real time. When you look at her, what feels most different from your own starting point, and what are you most proud of?
I'm deeply proud of the work ethic that she has, that I hope I instilled in her, and that she has the opportunity to do things that I never dreamt about doing. Going places that I've never been, and also continuing to give back. I know that helping people resonates with her too. So I'm proud of that and the woman that she has become.
Mary, thank you so much. The American dream is alive and well and living in your family.
Thank you so much.
I want to thank our guest, Mary Vasquez from the United Way, Chief Impact Officer of the United Way. And I want to thank KPFT for all the support and putting us on this program. Amplified Houston is supported in part by The Cottage Shop, a thrift store located at A11 Westheimer Road in Houston, which is owned and operated by the Women's Home. Proceeds from the Cottage Shop pay for programs that help women reclaim their lives. And we are a United Way agency, proudly so. Further information can be found at thewomenshome.org/cottageshop. Be sure to stay tuned for Gulf Streams with Weston Twardowski for the latest environmental and climate news in the Gulf Coast region and beyond. This is Anna Coffey, Amplified Houston, the Women's Edition, over and out.
It's now or never.
Check the back seat. Check the back seat.
All right, come here.
Check the back seat.
Gets in your head, right? Good. Because every year, dozens of children are forgotten in the backseat of a car by a parent or caregiver. All never thought it could happen to them. But with changes in routines, distractions, or a sleeping child, it can happen to anyone. Parked cars get hot, fast, and can be deadly. So get it in your head.
Check the back seat.
A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
KPFT artist profile, Mary Gaucher.
KPFT is very, very important because it builds community around songwriters. It's about independent people and independent artists who are singing truths and who are being brave. It's about having voices where there's not often a microphone to speak into. There is an independence to all of this that's inspirational and I think deep.